Okay. I want to speak about a topic that has to do with the beginning of this week's Sedra. And Mirtz Hashem, one day, probably soon, will be relevant to all of you. And it's a topic already that you probably have not discussed in the past, but you're now of the age and maturity that you can hear it being discussed now. And that is, the beginning of Tazria says that when a woman gives birth, so she becomes Tamei for 7 days if she gives birth to a boy, and 14 days if she gives birth to a girl. Tamei means that she can't go into the Beis HaMikdash, and she can't eat korbanos, and she can't live with her husband. She can't have relations with her husband. That's the tumah, just as if when she has her nida, she's just like a nida for 7 days or 14 days because of the birth. Okay. And then, after that, after the 7 days and 14 days are up, then she has 33 days of tahara for a boy and 66 days of tahara for a girl, meaning that even if she sees dam during those 33 days and 66 days, she's tahar, she's allowed to live with her husband, she still can't go to the Beis HaMikdash. At the end of the 40 days for the boy, the 33 and 7, and the 66 and 14, 80 days for the girl, she goes to the mikveh, and she brings korbanos to the Beis HaMikdash, an ola and a chatas, in a different order, a chatas and an ola, and then she can go into the Beis HaMikdash and eat korbanos or whatever. That is the process of tumas and taharas later. Okay. Now the obvious question is, why in the world would having a baby make you tummy? And if it makes you tummy already, why would then it make you extra tar? What's the concept? And included to that also is the fact that when a woman has a baby, she goes through a lot of pain, right? Just the whole inyan of getting pregnant, right, involves a whole cycle that a woman has throughout her life. That's not very comfortable, I imagine. And then, finally she gets pregnant, she goes through 9 months of pregnancy, which is not easy either. Okay, all kinds of, morning sickness and all different kinds of things, and it's difficult to carry around the kid for 9 months, I also assume. I never had the experience, but I assume that that's the case. And then she has the pain of giving birth, which is also a big pain. And then comes the main pain of raising these children for the rest of their life, right? And that pain never ends. Okay. In fact, the Torah says the order of the pain of tsar gidl bonim, of raising children. First it mentions raising the children. Then it speaks about getting pregnant and giving birth. So the obvious question is the wrong order. First it should speak about getting pregnant, then it speak about giving birth, and then raising your children. You don't raise children before you get pregnant and give birth. So there are a few different answers to that. I'll tell you what other people say, then I'll tell you what I think. Some people say that, I think the Mariel Diskin and the Brisker Rav both say this idea, that by Chava, she didn't have any pain in getting pregnant and giving birth, because that was, she got pregnant and gave birth before the chait, and that's when there was no pregnancy 9 months. You got pregnant, you gave birth right away without any pain. The whole pain and pregnancy is only a result of the chait of Adam and Chava, which we'll discuss in a second, and therefore her first pain was bringing up children, because she already had gone through the pregnancy and the birth. And it didn't cause her any pain because she was before the chait. So that's one answer. Another answer they say is that, I think the Reb Chaim Volozhiner says, that a girl, right, before she's married, usually helps her mother bring up the other children in the family. So she already has tsar gidl bonim before she even gets married, right, her brothers and sisters that she brings up usually. And then she gets married, then comes getting pregnant herself and giving birth. I have a different answer. And that is, if a woman would know that, okay, it's uncomfortable to be pregnant and it's painful to give birth, but then it's over. After that, everything is just hunky-dory, you know, just a cherry pie. So then, it's okay, so this is, you know, a small amount of time. But the Torah said, no, it's not going to end after that. You're going to have this tzar gidl banim throughout the child's life, bringing up a child. It's not easy. Then the pregnancy and the birth are even worse, because you know it's not going to end. So the Torah mentions the tzar gidl banim on the open end before it mentions the other ones to even increase how much that tzar is. Now the question is why? Why did the Rabban Shem want Chava to go through this tzar? It was a punishment because she sinned, so she sinned. What does that do with other generations? And also, Adam also has to work hard to make a living, and he's going to die. Everybody's going to die before this matter. So the Sfarno says one perspective on these onshim was not an onish. It's not to punish them because they did something bad; they got punished. But it was a tikkun. What when they were chote? What did they do? They didn't appreciate the life that Hashem gave them and how to use it properly. And therefore, the Rabban Shem wanted them to appreciate life and use it properly, because if you use life properly in this world, you can make it eternal. You get Olam Haba. And if you waste your time in this world and you don't use your life properly, then you're mamish wasting eternity. So it's a very serious thing. So therefore, what comes with difficulty makes you think, and you appreciate it much, much more than what comes easier. Therefore, the Rabban Shem says the Sfarno said, life is not going to be open-ended in this world. It's going to be limited. And you're not going to have all the time in the world. You're going to have only a certain amount of time in this world. And then you'll appreciate how important it is, and you'll use it properly. So it's a tikkun. It's not an onish, right, that people have to die. It's a tikkun for the fact that Adam and Chava showed that if something is not induced from the outside, they're not going to appreciate their life and use it properly. So the Rabban Shem first shortened life in this world. If you don't have a lot of something, you appreciate it. If you have all the time in the world, so I'll do it tomorrow, the next day. But if you know that you only have a certain amount of time, you make the best of it. So therefore, that's Misa. And therefore, Adam HaRishon, when he had to, earn a living, which means that's what you make your life from, what you make your parnasa, it's not going to come easy. If it comes with difficulty, then you have to think about it, and something that comes with difficulty, you appreciate. If you have to work hard for your living, then you appreciate living more. And the same thing, Chava was Eim Kol Chai. She brought all future life into this world. And therefore, the Rabban Shem said, I want you to appreciate the life you're bringing in. You have the ability to mamish bring new life in your own body. So I want you to appreciate that. So it's not going to come easy. It's going to come with pain, right, with discomfort, and that makes you think, and it makes you appreciate it. And I want you, therefore, to appreciate this inyan that you have to bring life into this world. And that new life serves a lot of purposes, right? Why is there a mitzvah to have children? Could be it's not on the woman herself, but she is a partner with her husband to fulfill that mitzvah, right? So one reason is because the Rabban Shem wants the world to be populated. Everybody has a part in this world, and the world's not complete until everybody's here. And that's why it says Mashiach won't come until all the neshamas are used up. Because every neshama has something to add, and the puzzle isn't complete until every neshama comes. So it's a mitzvah to have children, to bring all those neshamas into the world. That's one reason. A second reason is, it gives a hemshech to the parents, right? You can't accomplish everything in your life. So you have children, and they accomplish, and they carry on what you started to accomplish in their lifetime, and their children in their lifetime. And that also brings shleimus to the world, because nobody can accomplish everything perfectly himself. It carries on afterwards, and it also gives a hemshech to the person when you're in Olam Haba, and you have children in this world, so they give you a connection to this world, so you continue on through your children. And also, it gives parents a hemshech even when they're old. They have somebody to take care of them or whatever. It's a it's a hemshech to the parents, and it also is a an idea of bringing more of the Hashem. The whole purpose of this world is that people should be makir the Ribono Shel Olam. And parents bring children to the world and they give them education and they teach them, they send them to Chedvas or whatever and teach them how to be makir the Ribono Shel Olam. So all of those reasons, Gidul Bonim, bringing children into this world, right, is their shlemus, the shlemus of the world, the shlemus of the parents, and for the sake of all of it, is for the sake of all of these people earning Olam Haba. So therefore, it comes with difficulty. Because if it does, it comes too easy, you don't appreciate it. So that is the inyan of Tzar Gidul Bonim. The same thing goes with Tumah. Tumah is a feeling of separation from the Ribono Shel Olam. And Tumah also has a separation from husband and wife. This kind of Tumah. Right? Husband and wife can't have relations. Right? They have to be physically apart during that time of the Tumah. And we know from Shir HaShirim that the relationship between a husband and a wife is the model of the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and a person. So when you're Tameh, you feel that distance, separation. You don't go into the Beis HaMikdash. You can't eat karbanos. You can't be intimate with your husband, and that gives you a feeling of how important it is when you could have a connection with the Ribono Shel Olam. When you're missing something, then you appreciate what you're missing. And you appreciate more what you have when you have it. So Tumah is sometimes caused by separating yourself from the Ribono Shel Olam. But over here, it's the opposite. The Ribono Shel Olam wants you to appreciate the relationship you have with Him and the relationship you have of bringing life into this world and the relationship you have with your husband. In order to appreciate it, you have to sometimes not have it and then you want it more. By not having it, sometimes you appreciate the light by being in the darkness for a while. If you take the light for granted, one of the ways of appreciating the light is put you into a cellar where there's no light and then bring you back into the light. And now you appreciate it more because you can contrast it with what you didn't have. So during that period of your life, when you are separated from bringing life into the world, right, the monthly separation, and then the idea of getting pregnant and having a child, all involves Tumah, so you feel how bad it is to be separated from the Ribono Shel Olam and separated from your husband, and then you have a greater appreciation when you can do it. And there then comes Yemei Tahara. And it's the exact amount of time that it takes for a child to form, at least according to one opinion. It takes 40 days for a boy to form in the womb, Yetzirah Savlad, right, to be complete as a little human being and then to grow. It takes 9 months to grow enough to come be born. But the first 40 days are Yetzirah Savlad. The child is formed with his major thing. It takes 40 days for a boy and 80 days for a girl. So the time of Yetzirah is this process. 40-day process for a boy, 7 days Tameh, 33 days Tahar, right? And for a girl, 14 days Tameh and 66 days Tahar. Okay, but the idea being that if you go through the difficulty, the separation from Hashem, you'll appreciate how close you can come to the Ribono Shel Olam by life. How much life can make you part of the Ribono Shel Olam, can be Yachal, and give you Olam Haba, eternity. So this whole process is to really impress upon you how important what you're doing is, and feeling how bad it is to be separated from Hashem, and then you appreciate more how to be close to Hashem, and how to use and educate and bring up that child to be close to the Ribono Shel Olam. That's the process. That's why most times when a person has to bring a chatos and an ola, so the Torah says first bring the chatos and then bring the ola. Okay? Here by Leda, you always taka bring the chatos first, but the Torah mentions the ola first over here. It's the only place. First it mentions the ola, then the chatos, even though in actuality you bring the chatos first. Now the reason you always bring the chatos first is because the chatos corrects the negative. You sinned something. You did something wrong. So you bring a chatos, you do tshuva, and it corrects that. And Ola brings you closer to Hashem. Before you can come closer to Hashem, you have to fix up what you did wrong. So first comes the Chatos, fix up the negative, and then comes the positive, extra closeness to Hashem. That's normally. A person's a Metzora. He spoke Lashon Hara. He did something wrong. So first he brings a Chatos, then he brings an Ola. First fix up the bad, Sur Meira, then the Aseh Tov, then to do the good. But by Leda, you didn't do anything bad. They wouldn't do anything bad. She needs a kapara. She had a baby. So really the whole purpose over here is to feel stronger that connection to Hashem. But in order to do that, you need first to feel how negative it is to feel separated from Hashem. So really the whole purpose is the Ola. That's the Iker. The getting closer to Hashem. It's just the Chatas is there to let you appreciate the Ola more. Here it's not to fix up something negative, even though the Gemara says that there is something negative here, that when a woman gives birth, the pain is great, and she swears she's never going to live with her husband again and get pregnant again. Even if she doesn't say it, she thinks it. And therefore, this is a kapara for that. Meaning that sometimes you can take the pain in the wrong way, and say, forget it, I don't have anything to do with this. Or you can take it in a positive way and say, wow, this came so with such difficulty and such pain, it must be worth something. And I feel how much it's worth. So in order to put it in the proper perspective, right, all of this, what potential you have to bring life into this world and to raise children. And the father has his tsar. Doesn't have the physical tsar, but he has to teach these children Torah. That's also a tsar to educate the children or whatever. And he has to perform bris milah on the child. And that's why bris milah is part of this whole process. Because that also represents the idea of shleimus ha'adam. That this brings shleimus to the world. It brings perfection. A person is created imperfect, and he needs to perfect, be perfected, right? And that's called bris milah, perfecting an imperfect person who's born, what's it called, imperfect, and has to be perfected. And here's where we learn that bris milah is docha Shabbos. Shabbos represents the perfection of the world. Shabbos is the end of the creation. But it's more important the perfection of the human being more than the perfection of the world. And therefore, Bismillah is Docha Shabbos. The world is very nice, but the purpose of the world is for human beings. And perfecting a human being is more important even than perfecting the world. So this is the idea of Tuma and Tahara. The Tuma gives you a feeling of distance from Hashem, distance from your husband, in order that you should appreciate the relationship both to Hashem and your husband in bringing life into this world, and then appreciate how to bring up those children, and therefore even the bringing up of the children. The whole process is not only involved with Tuma, where you feel spiritually separated, but it goes through pain. Pain is there also to make you feel and think and appreciate what you're going through. If it comes too easy, you don't appreciate it as much. The more a person suffers through something, right? A mother, therefore, is much closer to the children than the father, because she went through all of this. It's more precious to her. Whatever you suffer through, whatever you put in a lot of effort to, is more precious. And that's why also, the more that a person understands that his life is limited, the more precious every moment is. And the more precious it is to have to get married and have children, because you know that if you don't get married and have children, then you're not going to have a hemshech. You're not going to bring into this world a hemshech that's going to exist after you leave this world, right? And that makes marriage and having children very special, which explains the following Gemara. The Gemara says that at the chasana of Rav Hamanuna Rabba, I think it was Rav Hamanuna Rabba, so they asked one of the Tanoim to sing a song, L'Kovod D'Chosan Kala. So here was his song. Vailon D'Misna. Oh, we're all going to die. That was the song. He must have sang a real, nice niggin. And they said to him, well, what's the refrain? What are we supposed to say? So this refrain was, where's the suitcases and the luggage we're going to take along? In other words, the Torah and mitzvahs or whatever. That was the refrain. Now that sounds like, a party pooper. Here's a guy at a chasana, right? And they ask him to sing a nice song for the chasana kala, and all of a sudden he talks about everybody dying. We're all going to die, right? That's the idea. If people wouldn't die, they'd live forever, so why get married? Why have children? I'm going to live forever. But if I'm not going to live forever, then I want to have children who are going to live after me and continue on what I'm not going to do anymore in this world, and be there in my place when I'm in Olam Haba, and give me an anchor in this world. So if you really want to appreciate getting married and the importance of marriage, you have to appreciate the fact that life is not eternal. That in this world it comes to an end, and therefore it's very important to get married and have children. So the Iker Simcha of Chasen and Kala is appreciating the importance of what you're doing. Part of that is putting into perspective that, that you're not going to live eternally, and therefore it's important to get married and have children. So that is Taka, adds to the Simcha. And therefore, if you look in the Parsha, there's something very interesting. I saw that others speak about this, but they say a different pshat. It's a very simple idea. In the beginning of the Seder, it says like this: Isha ki sazria, the yolda zohar, right? Woman gets pregnant, and she has a male. The imnekeva say laid, and then a little few psukim later says, and if she has a female. And then it says the following: Uvim laos yimei tahara. When she finishes this process of Tuma and Tahara, on the 80th day for a girl, or the 40th day for a boy, Uvim laos yimei tahara, lebein olibas, then she should bring the following korbanos. What's the difference? It starts with what? Having a zohar and a nekeva. And it ends with a ben and a bas. Why? Because when you start the process and you just give birth, before you go through this whole process, so you don't appreciate what you had. You had a male and a female. Animals have males and females too. But a ben and a bas, ben means somebody who builds you, who builds up the world. And a bas is the same thing. Bas is really bras. She's the one who builds the world too. Right? It's like almost a benas. A bas is the same construction. So going through this process, when it starts, all you had was a male and a female, like every animal has males and females. They have children. But they're not children, they're just offspring. But when you go through this process, and you become Tameh, and then you become Tahar, and you go through all of this pain and difficulty, then it changes the Zohar and the Keva to a Ben and a Bas. Now they're Taka, somebody that are building up yourself, building up the world, and now you'll appreciate how to educate them and bring them up properly, right? Because you appreciate what it means to bring new life into this world, and what schus a woman has to be able to do that. Right? No man in the world could ever do it. If you're looking to see the things should be equal, you know, shivyon hanetel between men and women, right? And that's why today they have these lamaz idea where the husband, you know, goes together with the wife and he's there when she gives birth and he breathes together with her or whatever, right? It's all very nice, but I'm sure that my wife would have rather breathed deeply than go through pregnancy and a birth. So a husband who fools himself into thinking, well, we're going through this together, right, is absurd. We're going through this together. You're breathing deeply and I'm everyone's pain, right? Right, you want to get a sledgehammer and knock yourself in the stomach, maybe then you're going through it together. But it's all part of this philosophy that everybody has to be equal. Not everybody has to be equal. The Rebbe Shlomo made different roles, but he gave a woman, Taka, this role. It's not necessarily fair, right? You know, when I got married, I told my wife, look, I want to be fair. So I'm willing to get pregnant half the time, you get pregnant half the time. It never worked out. We had 11 children, Kenina Hara, and 10 pregnancies because we have twins. And she was pregnant every time, and I never had to get pregnant. I just had to say Divrei Torah by the Bris or by the Kiddush or whatever, you know, a big deal. So, but that's what the Rabbanu Shalom, that's how he made the world. Then nothing you can do about it. But he, at the same time that a woman has to go through that difficulty, but she has the schus of bringing mamish a life into this world, which no man could ever do. And it's a tremendous schus, a tremendous, tremendous thing if you think about it. So on the one hand, she has the downside, the negative side, but she has the positive side too. So a man's job in that Tsar Gidl Bonim is eternal living, to support those children, to educate them, to learn Torah with them, to make a bris mitzvah, whatever it is. He has all his responsibilities too. But in order for the woman, for Chava, Eim Kol Chai, she's the mother of all life in this world, to appreciate life, it has to come with difficulty, and it has to be limited. Then you appreciate it, and Tumah gives you an appreciation from a spiritual standpoint, and Yisurim give you a appreciation from a physical standpoint, and that, in my estimation, is the whole idea of Tumas Leda and Taharas Leda, and it also has to do at the same time with feeling close to your husband or distance from your husband, because it's all part of the same package. Right, that bringing life into the world has to do between husband and wife, and it has to do also with the feeling close to a husband gives you a feeling of being close to the Ribbono Shel Olam. The feelings between a husband and wife is the model, like in Shir HaShirim, for the love and association and connection between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Klal Yisrael and every person with the Ribbono Shel Olam. So that is the idea of Tuma and Tahara when it comes to Leda. There's another idea, a simple idea, I think, that the Kutzke Rebbe says something similar to that, and I'm going to tell you a little bit different than what he says. The idea of Tuma is wherever there was Kedusha in a place, and the Kedusha left, there's a vacuum that's formed by the absence of the Kedusha. An empty space. The Kedusha was there, now it's not there anymore. That empty space is Tuma. Or, according to some, that empty space is a vacuum. Vacuum doesn't stay empty. Something always fills a vacuum. It's part of the laws of nature. You can't have a natural vacuum in this world. Something always fills it up. So if it's empty, something is going to fill it up. What fills it up? Tuma. So either the Tumah is what fills up the vacuum, or the vacuum itself, the absence of the Kedusha, is Tumah. So that's why the greater the Kedusha, the greater the Tumah when that Kedusha leaves. What is the most Tumah thing in the world? A Jewish dead body. Why? Because a Jewish live body has a Neshama that's the highest level, even greater than Malachim. When the Neshama leaves, so there's a vacuum. The body now, it doesn't have that Neshama anymore inside of it. So the Tumah fills up that vacuum. And it's greatest Tuma because the greatest Kedusha. The greater the vacuum, the greater the Tuma. So the greater the thing that's left is the greater the Tuma. The greater the Tuma. And that's why non-Jews have a lesser Neshama. So they have a lesser Tuma when they die. Animals have lesser Kedusha. They have a lesser Tuma when they die. The more Kodesh, the more Tuma when that Kedusha leaves. So the Kutzke Rebbe says the following. He says the one of the keys that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not give over to any malach, but he takes care of himself personally, is birth. The Ribbono Shel Olam is at every birth. Every birth, the Shechinah is there. And after the birth, the Shechinah leaves. So that causes Tumah. There's Kedusha in a place and it left. Right? So that, but it doesn't explain why there's Tahara then after that. Then why is there extra Tahara after those of the initial Tumah? Right? So I want to say a little bit differently. I'm going to say like this. When a woman's pregnant, and it doesn't speak for every different possible detail, but in general, when a woman's pregnant, she has two neshamas, her own and the baby's. When she gives birth, she loses one of those neshamas. It goes out. So it's just like a person dying. When a person dies, his neshama leaves him. Well, when a woman gives birth, a neshama leaves her. So it causes Tuma. Okay, on the other hand though, but she brought another neshama into the world. So it causes Tahara too. It brings more Kedusha. When a person dies, his neshama goes somewhere else. It's gone. So it only creates Tuma. When a woman loses one of her neshamas that was part of her when she gave birth, the maisa of that other neshama comes into the world. So it creates Tuma because the neshama left her. But it creates Tahara because she created a new neshama in the world too. That would imply, yes, you're right, that's what you're thinking, that when she gives birth to a boy, so the Tuma is only 7 days. Okay? And therefore the Tahara is only 33 days. But the neshama of a girl is a greater neshama, so it causes more Tuma when it leaves and it causes more Tahara when it's here. So that would imply that the neshama of a girl is greater than the neshama of a boy. Why? Because the neshama of a boy can't create new life on itself. right? Only indirectly, but not actually physically. But a girl, not only is that girl part of the mother, but she's also potentially another life-bearing person in this world. So therefore, the girl's neshama is double than what the boy. The boy is just his own neshama. The girl has a potential to bring other life into the world. So she has double tumah, because the vacuum that's caused when that neshama leaves is greater. And the male, greater tahara too. Double tahara too. So that would imply that the loss of a female neshama from the mother causes a greater loss than the loss of a male neshama from the mother. The boy makes it up because he has a mitzvah bris milah, so that adds other kedusha. But everything balances out eventually. But that would seem, according to my interpretation, that would seem to imply that the loss of the girl neshama causes more tumah and more tahara, because it has a greater potential, when we're talking about life, and life and death is what tumah is all about, that what's it called, that she has a greater potential for life, she has a greater tumah when it leaves, and a greater tahara being around. Okay. Any questions on this? Okay, but it gives you a little bit of an understanding of this process, and Mirtz Hashem, someday you'll experience it, and besimcha, and you'll remember a little bit about what it's all about. I'm sure by that time you'll learn so much more that you'll have other ideas that maybe are better than what I'm telling you, but I think what I'm telling you is reasonable. Okay. Any questions? No. Okay. Yeah.
We're supposed to, like husband and wife, we're supposed to be like us and Hashem, but we're not partners.
Yes and no. Even with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a relationship with us in different ways. Some kinds of relationships like a brother and a sister, that are sometimes like a husband and a wife. In certain ways, a husband and wife are not 100% equal, right? In certain ways, the wife is superior. In certain ways, the husband's superior in certain things. And with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the same thing. Sometimes our relationship is an equal relationship. We love the Rabbanu Shalom, and we do for him. We bring him, we do his ratzon, and they give him nachas. Right? So that's on an equal basis. On the other hand, we're subservient to him. We have to do what he tells us to do, right? Because he created us or whatever. Certain respect, a wife is subordinate to her husband. In certain respects, a wife is equal to her husband, right? And therefore the relationship, and the same thing goes for the husband. So therefore the relationship has many different aspects to it. Certain aspects are like this aspect, certain like this, but in the totality of the relationship of a husband and a wife is mamish like becoming one. That's how a person has to be with the Rabbanu Shalom too. The relationship, the Chazon Ish says, the relationship of a husband and wife has to be like a right hand, a left hand. One person, just what's it called, different functions, but not two separate things. They say that Revalu Levine, his wife once had problems with her legs, so he went to the doctor to check it out. And the doctor came out, and they were sitting in the waiting room. And the doctor said to Rav Ari, what's the problem? Why are you here? He said, because my wife's legs hurt us. So that's the way it has to be, right? That's not my wife's legs hurt her. It hurts us, right? I feel that pain just as much as her. We're like one person, and whatever she feels, I feel. That's a very high madrega. But that's how a person has to feel with every Jew, and have to feel together with the Rabbanu Shalom. It's one of the reasons that person davens that the Gola should end, because the Rabbanu Shalom suffering can be yachal. So you feel the pain of the Rabbanu Shalom, that his shechin is in Golas, right? And when Klal Yisrael can't be on the right level, he suffers. Like a parent suffers when a child is sick, right? Or a child is off the derech or something. The parent suffers. It's the parent's sar. So you feel bad for the parent. You want the child to be okay, not just for his sake, but for the parent's sake too. Okay. Yeah.
Does that mean a woman should do a tzaddik when she
has
a baby?
A woman should what?
Now a woman brings a korban.
Right.
She's like swearing that she's not going
right.
to have
a baby. Right.
So nowadays, shouldn't she have to like do something?
Yeah. So what a woman does today, what's in place of of that korban is that some have the minig that on the 80th day after she gives birth to a girl, or the 40th day when she gives birth to a boy, she comes to shul and she answers kedusha, and that takes place of the korban. Or some don't wait till the 80th of the way. She comes and she lets go. She benches gomel when she can go out, and she comes to shul the first time to say kedusha. It's like mamish bringing a korban.
Why not everyone benches gomel?
What?
Not everyone
benches. Not everybody benches gomel because since gomel has to be in front of a minyan, so some people hold it's not sunnua for women to have to stand in front of women. But the Mishnah Berurah says not like that. Mishnah Berurah says nothing not sunnua with a woman standing in the Ezra's noshim. Right, and saying Hagomel, right, and men should be able to answer her to her bracha. There's nothing wrong with that. And she should do it. She should bench Gomel whenever she has to bench Gomel, unless the custom in the place is not to do it. You shouldn't do against the custom. But where we live, the custom is women bench Gomel. They take a trip, or anytime you have to bench Gomel, women bench Gomel too. And they should do it with a minion, or do it in the family. Right, after, sometimes, you know, you have a kiddush, you have a bris, and it's already after the eighth day, obviously. Right, so she's already well and walking around and fine, and then she benches gomel with the family members there. That's also possible.